Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 19th of November. Mondays at 9, our All Things Political segment. We have two guests with very different political perspectives. We're going to be looking, of course, at the presidential race. We'll be looking at the war in Iraq and the Democrats' unsuccessful attempt to change direction there. And whatever you'd like to comment on, our phones are always busy during this hour. On Monday mornings, our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee today, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. And we have an email address. You can send your comments at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Two guests, half hour. John Fortier, research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, will be joining us momentarily. David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones Magazine, will be joining us the second half hour. And you can join us whenever you would like. Hello, John. Thanks so much for being with us.
Morning, Kathleen.
Let's start with the war. I was reading the Times today, and there were two very different quotes here, and I want your response to them. Congressional Democrats will not stop championing the will of the American people until our troops come home. From Representative John Murtha, Senator Ensign from Nevada, saying the American people, I think, would rather have General Petraeus running the war than members of Congress. These are really different perspectives. Where are the American people on this, do you think? And then the second part of the question is this a significant issue that will play into the presidential race in a huge way?
Well, I think in general, Democrats are in a much better position on the war. The war is still quite unpopular, and President Bush is unpopular. So I do think that there are some positive developments, and some of those are associated with the surge that that President Bush has put forth in this past year. But look, overall, the war has taken a long time. America is not happy with it, and I think it's to the benefit of the Democratic Party. Changing things very quickly from having a Congress of a Democratic persuasion and a Republican president, that's probably not a very realistic situation. I think we're going to see it probably something like the status quo until the election. It will play into the election very much. It doesn't guarantee the Democrats a win, but it certainly is something that is helping them. It's in their favor, and something that the Republican candidates, especially when they get to the general election, will have to explain how they are different than George Bush and how they, in some ways they're similar. And it's much more of a problem for Republicans.
Hmm. But the American public seems to be pretty upset with the Democrats as well for not being able to affect change, John.
It's true. If you look at Congress has the lowest ratings it's ever had.
Yeah.
And, that is a combination of things. One, it's, of course, Republicans and some independents may not be crazy about a Democratic Congress, but then Democrats themselves are frustrated with the Democratic Congress, which they put in office, they believe, to essentially change the war direction, to move us out of there. And it's a very difficult thing to do. The president runs foreign policy. The president is toward the end of his term, and governing there, and even with a Democratic president, will be difficult. It's not so easy as to just say bring the troops home. But there is some frustration on the Democratic side. I don't think that is going to make them go somewhere else. They're going to vote Democratic. I think they're still frustrated with the president. And if you look at some of the other numbers out there, the numbers of who would you like to control Congress, the generic vote on who would you like to be president, which party, those things are certainly in the Democratic direction in a pretty strong way today.
Mm-hmm. And yet, if you took that poll, I think I've seen this somewhere, that the American people actually would like to see some divisions, right? They would like the Republicans to control some things. They'd like the Democrats to control some things, thinking that we'd get more bipartisanship, we'd get consensus, we would reflect the American will.
Well, there is that argument out there. I'm not sure that there are that many people who are going to consciously vote to split their ticket. There are a few, but in general, as I say, I think the atmosphere looks, unfortunately for Republicans, much like 2006. There's a general tilt in the election against Republicans. That's not to say that some of the individual matchups, the presidential race, couldn't favor Republicans. But as an overall matter, it's something Republicans have a bit of an uphill battle.
What individual matchups would favor Republicans?
Well, I guess maybe I'm overstating it now. I'm not sure anything would favor Republicans, but some would certainly be closer for Republicans. If you look at just generic Republican A versus generic Democratic A, you have a 10 or 12 point margin for the Democrats. Whereas if you look at some of the races between Rudy Giuliani and Hillary Clinton or John McCain, who may have a tougher race, it's quite close. It still favors Hillary Clinton by a small amount, but the polls are within the margin of error. Certainly, Rudy Giuliani doesn't look like your typical Republican, could compete in places that some Republicans couldn't. So certainly there is a dynamic of the race, the changes that could happen, and individual candidates that could tip the balance. My other point is just that it's a little bit of an uphill battle given the where we are politically and given what's been happening the last year and a half. Republicans are going to have to go up that hill a little bit to get there, but they can with certain candidates.
Do you think it's a given, John, that Hillary will be the nominee?
I don't think it's a given, but I think it's a very strong likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic side, I think, is much more clear cut than the Republican side. You have a clear number 1, 2, and 3 with Hillary, Obama, and Edwards, and that's both true in the national polls, but also in the state polls, the early states, especially Iowa. And New Hampshire are now starting to reflect Hillary Clinton's strength. It's still quite close in Iowa, so it's possible that she would lose that state, but she leads in most polls. And even if she were to lose a close race, I think she has the strength to come back. So it is possible she could lose, but she certainly is a very strong favorite on her side.
And what about the Republican side? How would you rank the candidates, 1, 2, 3?
Yeah, I really think there almost is no way to rank them, 1, 2, 3. There is a leader in the national polls. It's Rudy Giuliani. That's clear and has been for the last 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a typical Republican. And I think if you look at it this way, that if he is able to keep conservatives divided, the conservative vote is split now between Fred Thompson and Mitt Romney and to some extent Mike Huckabee and a little bit John McCain, then he looks pretty good, this moderate being able to win in the Republican Party. But if a conservative unites the more traditional base behind him, then watch out for someone else. And I think looking at Mitt Romney today, somebody who is low in the polls overall, the national polls, but is quite strong in Iowa, quite strong in New Hampshire, and the relative weakness of Fred Thompson, who has not performed as well as people had hoped, there is the possibility that conservatives will unite behind, let's say, a Romney and make it difficult for Giuliani. So there's a real possibility of change in those early primaries, depending on what happens on the Republican side. Much more clarity on the Democratic side.
We're doing a show on Romney, the second hour, and it's on South Carolina, actually, and how he has so many people doing marketing for him in South Carolina that people tend not to trust where he is on positions, that he's, if you look at his record, he was governor of a very liberal state, a pretty liberal guy, and now all of a sudden he's a conservative. And I think that on both sides, maybe I'm off base here, what do you think? It seems to me as though the American people are looking for some kind of authenticity, and it's one of the reasons that McCain and Bradley did so well back in 2000, and that when they're criticizing campaigns, they're criticizing Romney for not being authentic, they're criticizing Clinton for not being authentic, and we're looking for somebody, you can describe that word any way you want. Maybe you take a position that's not very desirable, but you are who you are. You're a smart person. You state it forcefully, and you're authentic.
I think that is a desire of the American people, but it's mixed in with some other desires. And I guess I think on the Republican side, there really has been a hunger for some other candidate to come in the race. Polls show that Republicans aren't completely happy with their set of candidates. And I think that's what attracted people to Fred Thompson at first. That
yes, right.
There wasn't a traditional conservative, and they were worried that they might lose the election. They needed Ronald Reagan to walk into the race, and that might be Fred Thompson. That hasn't worked out the way that both the Thompson folks and some Republicans would like, but Mitt Romney clearly is making a play for the conservative vote, and while he has some mixed background on some of these issues, he's much more clearly appealing to that vote than is Giuliani or McCain. Mm. And I think he's smart. He knows that American politics in the primary season does depend on the early states. As much as we've moved around these some of these primaries, it's still Iowa and New Hampshire where people start to wake up. And when those results come in, if it's a Mitt Romney in Iowa and New Hampshire, that is a very big boost for him that will send him into other states as
right.
Signal to other conservatives that this is the guy. It's not Thompson. It's not someone else. And that's his hope, and that's where he's putting his money and his efforts.
Well, what happened to Thompson? I can remember not very long ago, John, that there was a great deal of excitement about his entering the race. Is it that he doesn't, if people have said, have this real desire to be president? He's just moving too slowly?
Well, a combination of things. I think he would have looked a lot better had he gotten in the race on July 4th, as many of us thought.
Hmm.
And then there was a couple-month period where he wasn't in, and we weren't sure why, and the stories started to come out about his campaign not being run very well, people leaving his campaign,
yeah.
that his background wasn't as pure as we'd all thought, and he was a lobbyist, and that this was 2 months of stories that really sort of stepped on his entry, which he finally made in September. So I think that Thompson just hasn't lived up quite to some very, very high expectations. And Mitt Romney is running a pretty good campaign. The other thing you could say is that the one disadvantage Thompson has is that Thompson really wanted to be the conservative voice for, especially for the South. He's from the South, and that's the base of the Republican Party. Mitt Romney was a conservative candidate but had appeal in other places. And for Thompson, those southern states, South Carolina comes a little early, but they don't come till later. There's a chance for Romney to really get going in Iowa, and he's from Massachusetts, or at least partly from Massachusetts, near New Hampshire, can possibly carry that momentum through, and that leaves Thompson trying to win in later states. So I think there are a couple things going against him right now. It's still a pretty fluid race, but I certainly think his chances are diminished. They were a few months ago.
Who are you for, John?
I don't have a candidate in the race. I don't ever endorse someone because I do a lot of analysis. But I think that a number of these Republican candidates could be a good challenge to Hillary Clinton, but something of an uphill battle. Rudy Giuliani would clearly be. Most Republicans feel like he is the most electable. They that's one of the things that are attracted to him by. And that he can compete in places. That's something seriously for Republicans to think about, given that their electoral prospects are not so great these days, and the overall polls are against them. Mitt Romney, I think, has to still introduce himself to America. He is the least known of the major candidates, and with those early wins, might be somebody that Republicans are turned on to. But we'll just have to see.
And how do you introduce yourself? Are we looking at almost exclusively a television campaign for all the candidates as a means of introduction, other than Iowa, where they've all been for 2 years shaking hands and going to coffee?
Well, no, I think that is something that we shouldn't underestimate, that in most countries you would not have this kind of hand-to-hand activity as we do in those early states.
Yes, right.
There's a joke about when Mo Udall ran for president in New Hampshire a few years ago, a voter was asked why he didn't vote for him, and the voter said, well, I only met Udall twice. And there are people who expect year after year, there's a tradition, they expect people to come to their town, they expect to really to be able to see the candidates. As much as money and polls matter, these early states can still really turn things around for people. It's John Edwards' only hope. If he were able to somehow pull out a win in Iowa, that would possibly get him back in the race. It's Mitt Romney's strategy, which might be successful, given that he's strong in both of those states. So I think it's the way to introduce people is often through Iowa and New Hampshire, that the rest of the country isn't paying. They're paying some attention, but they're not paying as much attention until they see those votes come in and they realize, wow, Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani, they really are strong because they've been able to win in these very high-profile early states. Now we need to wake up and look at them and see if we want to vote for them when they come to our state.
We have listeners in Iowa, some of whom will call in today on the eastern part of the state, and they call in regularly. And I got to tell you, last week we had a couple people call who had met every single one of the candidates. These were Democratic caucusers who had called. We were talking about the Democratic side. They had met every single one of them at least twice, and some of them had had private dinners with these people. And other people called and said, I'm so jealous I don't live in Iowa.
Well, I mean, there is a certain unfairness to it. People sometimes want to reform the process and make it more equal across the states, and there is some virtue in that, but I do think we have something that we should preserve in these early states, in Iowa, New Hampshire, that forces the candidates to do something on the ground, whereas the rest of the campaign is going to be much more of a media battle, of a nationwide appeal. I think this is the chance where we get to see the candidates, very, very close.
Let's welcome phone calls. John Fortier is our guest, the first half-hour research fellow for the American Enterprise Institute. It's our All Things Political segment. And we'll be with you in a moment at 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you'd like, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls now for John, and we start with Brian from Cedarburg. Hi, Brian.
Good morning. In listening to your discussion earlier about the war timelines for spending bills, I think the Democrats would be very wise to drop the pushing of the timelines issue with the war spending bills. Instead, what they should be focused on is paying for the war spending now instead of creating deficits for paying for the war in the future. I think the American public is realizing the fact that we cannot just withdraw very quickly out of Iraq simply for the fact, whether you were for the war or not, we've destroyed the government in that country. We cannot leave a vacuum in there, whether it was right to go to war or wrong to go to war there. I guess that's my comment.
All right, Brian, thanks for the call. John?
Well, I do think the American people are in a couple different places on this. I think they would like to see the war end somehow, but they're not sure how to do it, and they are a little wary about pulling out too quickly. I think the Democrats have really not paid any political price. They've been winning on the issue of the war, essentially politically, even though they haven't been able to affect any change. And they've been pushing pretty hard. Their primary has drawn Hillary Clinton and the others to the left and moved much more strongly against the war than they were at the beginning of the process. So I think if there is a Hillary Clinton presidency, she's going to face some difficulties. It's not so easy to say you're going to end the war. It's much more difficult than that. I think today, you know, it's hard for Democrats to force an executive, the president, to do something he doesn't want to do. But ultimately, in the background, I think the war is certainly helping Democrats, where Republicans are dispirited and many Democrats are united to put a Democratic president in office.
Thanks for the call, Brian. Let's connect to Dan from White Lake. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'll try to be brief. Seems to me in 2000 and 2004, the Republican base and the Democratic base was a standoff, and the independents controlled the election, and the same thing happened in 2006, except there were between 2004 and 2006. The politics of fear, as practiced by the Republicans, didn't take hold, and Democrats made some great headway, but now some lot of people that voted for them are disappointed. Now that the religious right is splintered, including some people who even have gone so far as to say we should have a third party, is that going to throw the balance to the Democrats in the 2008 election, no matter who the Republicans nominate? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Thanks, Dan.
I think that analysis is a pretty good one, in that there was a 2000 and 2004 were very close elections, and most people we call independents or call themselves independents actually are leaning one way or the other towards the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. There are really only a few right in the middle, but certainly the election tied in 2006 favored Democrats, and I think the polls today show a very similar atmosphere. So I'm not sure that's going to change before the election. The question of the splitting of the Republican base, I think they are less likely to vote, maybe a little bit dispirited than they were, but we're still not at the point where you see a real alternative. It is possible somebody will jump in the race as a third-party candidate on the Republican side, a religious conservative or a anti-immigration candidate, somebody like Ron Paul. But we haven't seen that yet. If that were to happen, it certainly would hurt Republicans. Even if that person were somebody like Ralph Nader, who got only 2-3% of the vote, it's not something that would help Republicans in an election where they're facing somewhat of an uphill battle.
But you don't see. A couple months ago, there was serious talk about conservatives bolting the party and forming a third party. You don't see that happening now, do you?
I don't see that. I mean, if any sort of third party were to come up, it's going to be an episodic one that just came up for this election. Forming a third party for the long term is very difficult in America. I also have heard the talk that if Rudy Giuliani was elected, there would be some dismay on the conservative side, and you'd form your own party, but again, that's a losing strategy. In a country with two big political parties, anytime you split one, you're certainly going to benefit the other. So we haven't seen the candidate go forward and make that plunge. If one were to do so, it certainly would hurt Republicans.
Paul is next from Cumberland. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Rudy Giuliani is pro-choice, but I've heard that if he were elected, he would nominate pro-life Supreme Court justices. I'm wondering if this is true, and if so, what this means and how it would work for him politically.
Well, what Rudy Giuliani has said is that he would nominate judges who follow the Constitution in a strict way. And that is, I think, meant to send the message that he's not trying to stack the court and overturn Roe v. Wade, to keep Roe v. Wade, to change the direction of typical Republican nominations, that he would essentially appoint modest conservative judges. I think that's probably true. If he were elected as a Republican president, even though he's pro-choice, his party would be mostly pro-life, and he would have a hard time governing if he were to really stick it in the eye of his party in certain key issues. So we'd have to see, but Rudy Giuliani is a pro-choice candidate who said he would nominate strict constructionist judges.
Thanks, Paul, for your call. Eric from Cashton, hi.
Hi there, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
I just wanted to throw out Ron Paul's name. I finally heard your guest mention it, but whenever in the beginning of the conversation he was talking about which candidates are viable candidates, Ron Paul's name never came up. And I just wanted to throw out there that Ron Paul, we raised over $4.3 million in one day for Ron Paul on November 5th. And he has over 1,000 meetup groups around the country, and there's more traffic driven to ronpaul2008.com than any other websites. He's won 20 of the 40 or more straw polls that have happened around the country. He's the only Republican candidate that wants to bring the troops home immediately. Look at his voting record, and everything that he says is exactly what he is campaigning on, that he's never voted to raise taxes. He's never voted for an unbalanced budget. All of his money comes from grassroots supporters. He doesn't take any money from lobbyists. And he's a real people's candidate. And right now, what I'm hearing on this conversation is that he is once again ignored, just like he's ignored in the mass media. So I just wanted to throw his name out there and encourage people to check out ronpaul2008.com, because he's a real candidate for the people, not paid for.
All right. Thanks for the call, Eric. John.
Well, I think Ron Paul has actually demonstrated more support than any of us thought, but is still something of a fringe candidate. He could be a spoiler. I think that's his role. If he performs better than expected in the early states, especially if he left the party. He once ran as a Libertarian presidential candidate. I don't have any indication that he will do so again, but he certainly has a sort of very independent streak. Libertarian Republicans, also the Republicans who are against the war, which is not most Republicans, but a slice of them. He's an interesting candidate, but I don't think he's got any chance of winning, but possibly as a spoiler to other candidates.
And one more call, Janice from La Crosse. Hi, Janice.
Hi, good morning, Kathy.
Hi.
And your guest is just great. I just really enjoyed listening to him. I just wanted to give my quick comment about myself. Being Catholic, I cannot vote for Rudy Giuliani because in my faith, that is not really a practicing Catholic. You're pro-life if you're Catholic, and he's not. And he's just, I don't know what you're going to get with Giuliani. A little bit scary there. So as far as flip-flopping around, then I have, right now, I feel like I wanted Brombeck, who is Catholic. He's out. So to me, Mitt Romney is the pro-family, pro-life value man that I want, that I feel like, you know, where can I go? I feel like I need to go to Romney at this point. And Ron Paul, he's too a little scary there, that guy, you know. So, I mean, it's really, this is going to be something. And I certainly don't want, you know who, Hillary. So it looks like Romney for me.
John.
Yeah, Romney, as I said, really is making the play to be the conservative candidate to consolidate that support. One other interesting issue, we a lot of polls show that America is pretty tolerant about having an African-American or a female president. There are some things in those polls that are troubling about people worried about Mormon presidents, that there are religious conservatives. Some of them are distrustful of Mormons, not on the public policy issues, which they agree, but on some religious differences. But if Romney can overcome that and win over religious conservatives, he's got the base in the early states to be able to beat Giuliani. We'll see, but he certainly seems to be the one at this point most likely to be able to consolidate conservative support as an alternative to Giuliani.
He has hinted in the last couple of weeks that he may hold a press conference to talk about his faith, because not too many people know that much about Mormonism. Would you advise him to do that?
I think he should. I think he should take it on. I think America is a a very tolerant place, and some of those poll numbers, I think, come from ignorance and people worrying about a religion they don't know that much about. And I think it would be wise for him to take that on directly, to say, look, I am a conservative on public policy. I agree with evangelical Christians and many Catholics, like the caller, and come vote with me. And we are, you know, religious people, and here's, you know, something about my particular faith. I think that would be a smart move for him.
Thank you so much, John, for being with us.
Great, thank you.
John Fortier, research fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. We're continuing all things political, just switching guests here. Same kind of focus. David Korn will be joining us, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones Magazine. Our phone number, we have a couple lines open if you'd like to join us. And the emails, we don't have any yet. So if you can't use a phone and you want to send an email about the political races, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And our phone number for you to join our on-air conversation now with David Korn is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Milwaukee area callers, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, David.
Hello.
Hi.
David, Kathleen.
Thanks, David, for being with us. Let's start where we started with John, and that concerns the war. What is it the Democrats could do what the American people want them to do concerning the war in Iraq? Do we want people home?
You mean win it and leave it at the same time?
Yeah, right. Is that what we want, both, huh?
Well, you know, Americans don't like the war. We had record numbers in polls recently of people who said they opposed the war. Of course, at the time, most Americans, you know, did endorse it. Smarter thinking Americans maybe didn't, but they clearly want the war to be over and done with. They don't want to be there. What the Republicans have used and what the Democrats have feared is the fear of what might happen if we pull out and the war turns into a loss. Clearly, the public doesn't want to see chaos in Iraq. Don't want to see America lose a war, and so the Democrats, their whole strategy in the last 2 years or so, as the public has turned against the war, has been to try to force Bush to end the war, not to end it themselves, because they don't want that responsibility, the political responsibility. Because, I've been in favor of disengagement for years now, but I recognize that, it could get even messier there, and there could be ugly consequences. And the Democrats don't want, people... If they were to force the end of the war, they'd want people waiting around saying, look, we were attacked 3 years after we left Iraq. That's your fault.
Yeah.
So they're kind of stymied by this. And Bush, as they've discovered, is stubborn. They're stymied, and he's stubborn because he has basically said he is not going to end the war no matter what they force him to do. And so the Democrats have this either-or proposition now of assenting more or less to the funding requests that come through. They tinker with them, they cut them in, by a quarter, but they'll give more money in a few months, or pulling the plug altogether, which they could do. They keep trying to put on these deadlines and policy amendments on how to change the nature of the war, and the president keeps vetoing them, and they don't have enough of a majority in the House and Senate to pass these, particularly pass them in a veto-proof way. So the Democratic leaders, if they wanted to, could basically say, we're just not going to vote any money for the Iraq war and do it that way. But I don't think they feel confident enough that the public will back them up on that.
Yeah. Considering the fact that the war was front and center for the midterm elections, I'm wondering how discerning we are as voters as we look at, or if there's any discernible difference among the Democratic candidates and the Republican candidates on this war. When we go to the voting booth, will we be thinking about that front and foremost again? And are there substantial differences among the Democrats, among the Republicans?
Well, that's just it. Right now, you don't see a really strong debate in the 2008 presidential contest about the war. Why is that? Because the Democrats largely agree amongst themselves on this, as do the Republicans, just on the opposite side of the policy. John Edwards and Barack Obama you know, been trying to, make it seem as if there's a big difference between their position and Hillary Clinton's present position. I have to emphasize the word present, because once upon a time there was a big difference. Barack Obama was against starting the war, and John Edwards and Hillary Clinton voted to get it going, and was what Bush started if he wanted to. And then Hillary Clinton, for the first couple of years, really was kind of a, more or less a war backer. And John Edwards, ended up apologizing for his vote, saying it was terrible. And so right now where things stand on the Democratic side is, Hillary Clinton says, if you elect me, I will end the war. I will convene my Joint Chiefs of Staff and my defense secretary and my new advisors and come up with a responsible plan for withdrawing troops and ending the war. John Edwards say, you elect me, and I'll start with a 40 to 50,000 troop withdrawal and then ease down from there. Barack Obama says, if you elect me, I'll be pulling out one or two brigades a month from, and hopefully within a year or so, get most of our combat troops out. You can quibble over these differences, but they all basically say we're going to, reverse course and disengage. Now, they say that now, we have to realize that they wouldn't become president for, 14 months from now. So, things may change, and they're, what they may want to do at that point is different. But so there's not a tremendous amount of difference in these positions. And on the Republican side, basically everybody is supporting, except Ron Paul, is supporting Bush. So there's no real, they all support the surge. They all say, Giuliani's plan for victory in Iraq, know what it is? Success. Or is it his plan for success is victory? It's one or the other.
Right.
And but so there's not a big difference. But come February 6th, 7th, 8th, if we have the more or less the nominees sorted out by them, the Democratic Republican side, I think the debate over the war is going to heat up a lot, because you will have a candidate from the Democrats to say, time to end it, not mend it, but end it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have Republicans going to say, this is essential to our security. And if I'm a Republican, I have to feel a little nervous about being in favor of a project that, 68% of Americans now oppose.
Right. You talk about by February 6th, 7th, or 8th, if we have things sorted out by then. Do you think we will, David?
I think there's a good chance on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, there can be more. You can have more a more fragmented race. I mean, this is just, mindless speculation, but everyone does it, so it's...
Right, it's kind of fun.
No reason why I shouldn't. But, I really, believe that Iowa is going to be very, very important, that... if Hillary could lose Iowa and still come on and win New Hampshire, and then February 5th, where there are about 84 states having a primary contest that day, the person with the money and Hillary with the organization, the national organization, could end up recouping from whatever loss that came earlier. I think if Obama and Edwards don't strike early, if you go after the queen, you have to kill the queen, and she's certainly the front runner, the establishment choice. If they don't really knock her, off the pedestal pretty far and do well themselves on Iowa, leading into New Hampshire, they may make it to Super Duper Tuesday on February 5th. But without momentum going in against the front runner, who's won the early contest, they're going to have a very hard time turning the tide there.
David, why do you think she is the front runner?
Well, I do have a theory on that, and I suppose by asking you would care to hear it.
I would love to hear it. I'm glad I asked the question.
Well, as we talked about the Iraq War, not tremendous amount of policy differences. I thought, a year ago, I thought that actually the Democratic primary would be about the war, that she'd be more defensive of it, and Edwards and Obama, if he got in, would be, like Bobby Kennedy challenging Hubert Humphrey on the war in 68. But she did whatever she could to make sure there was very little daylight between her and Obama and Edwards on the war and basically most other issues. Looking at it from the perspective of your average voter, these guys and gal don't have a big deal of difference on the issues. Their health care plans, some differences, but they all want some form of universal health care.
Mm-hmm.
They're all talking about being more skeptical on trade, although they disagree maybe on the Peru trade deal. But they all now say that NAFTA needs to be looked at again, even Hillary Clinton, whose husband, gave us NAFTA. On Social Security, two, you know, they're all against privatization, although only two out of three or four, you know, say right now that they would support taking the payroll cap off for the wealthy and raise money that way. But, you know, they all believe in global warming and doing something about it and energy independence. So there's not, you know, there aren't any foundational differences, I would say, ideologically, as there sometimes has been in the past in the Democratic primary, when you'd have a candidate, like, you know, a DLC candidate versus Jesse Jackson, you know, a traditional liberal Democrat type of candidate. But, and so there's no one sort of, you know, to raise that ideological banner. So what happens is you have Edwards and Obama. Well, I think they're very intelligent, capable politicians, and Democrats tend to like them, mm-hmm. by and large. But they're also still much less known. You know, Obama makes a great impression on people, but at the same time, no one really knows what he's done with his life. If you pay attention and you read, you can certainly learn what he's done. But it hasn't been watched. No one has seen Obama in action in any role other than as a presidential candidate, mm-hmm. for most voters. Hillary Clinton has been, for Democrats I'm talking about, you know, in the public eye for 35 years, but certainly, you know, in an intense way, for 15 years. Democratic voters have seen her fighting.
Right.
You know, what have they seen her fighting? They've seen her fighting Republicans, whether it was about a BJ in the White House, or whether it was about health care, something more serious. They've seen her, you know, in the trenches. And even if they didn't like everything that the Clinton administration did, it certainly looks good to them in retrospect after the W years. And so they know her. They know her as a first lady who fought for policies they care about. They've watched her as a senator. She's gotten a lot of attention. She's gotten a good rep as a senator. So they've been able to experience Hillary, while with John Edwards and Barack Obama, basically what they get with those candidates are two politicians telling them why they're great.
Mm-hmm.
And, the old line is it's better to show than to tell. And Hillary has been showing because she's had that forum for 15 years or so, those platforms, in which she's gotten, you know, people have paid attention to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that way, you know, name recognition, Bill Clinton is a tremendous asset amongst Democrats, even maybe among independents now, that she just is more well-known and more familiar. And people don't have questions about her.
Hmm.
You may have an opinion about her. You may question things about her. But people, you know, have a strong view of her. With John Edwards and with Barack Obama, from, you know, you and I paid very close attention to this stuff. You know, I've had the privilege of meeting both and seeing both up close and personal. You know, a lot of voters haven't. Some, you know, get that in Iowa, New Hampshire. But still, it's within a campaign context.
Right, right. They've also, though, just one more thing on Hillary Clinton before we go to phone calls. We have many of them. They've also seen her, though, fighting Bill Clinton. I mean, this whole Monica Lewinsky thing, this whole, you know, stand by your guy, the other women involved. You know, we think about that, too, when we think about the Clintons, don't we? And I'm wondering, a lot of people were upset by that. We were dragged through a mess in this country,
right,
for a long, long period of time. Are there a significant number of American people who say, you know, whoever was right, whoever was wrong on this, she should have stayed with him, she should have left, he is a liability to her, we've had enough of this, it could resurface again, we don't want any part of it?
Well, you know, to me, I think, you know, the question is, you know, if it resurfaces again, that will, you know, open up the door to all those questions you just raised.
Oh, you can be sure it's going to resurface. Don't you think the Republicans would use it?
No. When I say resurface, I mean resurface. I mean a new chapter.
Oh, great!
Okay,
just what we need, huh? Oh, brother!
A new chapter. No, I don't mean dredging up the past.
I mean,
you know, it's like, you know, bringing back Dallas. You know, with JR being a little bit older, but still up to his own tricks, as one might say. I think, because you're looking at Bush's poll numbers and the war and everything else, that people at this point in time are going to say, you know, been there, done that. Bill Clinton looks so good now in retrospect. You know, what he's done as an ex-president, how he compares, how his presidency compares to George W. Bush's. And you have to remember, at the time, you know, his approval ratings were in the 70s, mm-hmm. 60s, 70s, 80s.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
The more the sleeves came out and the
right.
more Republicans tried to go after him, the more popular he was. I used to say back then, boy, if they just caught him with a barnyard animal on the White House lawn, his numbers would go through the roof. I mean, the public had sort of decided that they don't care about this.
Although
they may have a feeling about it. They didn't want it to be used for political ends, and they didn't want him defenestrated from the White House. Over it by Republicans who are taking advantage, seem to be exploiting it. So I think in that way, it's going to be very hard politically for, you know, any Hillary opponent to bring that up. You know, Barack Obama has a stump speech line in which he talks about the baggage of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But amongst Democrats, you know, the baggage in chief, Bill Clinton, is wildly popular. Now, you know, you're going to see him campaigning more and more in Iowa and New Hampshire, particularly if the numbers get close for Hillary. And I think, you know, I wrote about this, a day or two back. You know, it's, you know, for I do a blog, davidkorn.com, that appears at the CQ site. And I said, you know, a year ago, we were kind of wringing our hands and saying, God, how is Hillary going to deal with Bill Clinton? Will she use him, not use him? He might outshine her, upstage her. And now I say, God, we were just complete idiots to even, you know, think that was a worry for her campaign. Bill Clinton's immensely popular. Democrats love him. And, you know, independents and even Republicans have begrudging respect for him now.
David Korn, our guest this half hour, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones Magazine. And we'll take your calls and emails in just one moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, we'll be talking with the Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. His article, Making Mitt Romney, How to Fabricate a Conservative, appears in the November issue of Harper's. All right, let's go to an email first, and then we'll take some more phone calls for David. I've heard that John Bolton and other neocons are backing Rudy Giuliani. I think the American people have had enough of neocon foreign policy. Would the guest please comment from Bonnie in Madison?
You're right. Next question. No, a lot of neocons have moved to the Giuliani campaign. The godfather or granddaddy, one of the few of the neoconservative movement, Norman Podhoretz, is a foreign policy advisor to Rudy Giuliani, and he wrote a piece recently about about why we should bomb Iran now. In fact, he kind of says it may even be too late, but he'd like to catch up if he can. But the interesting thing is, the guy who's the head of the Giuliani campaign foreign policy arm, this fellow named Charles Hill, who worked for George Shultz's Secretary of State, and he also worked for Boutros Ghali at the UN, and he is not a neocon. I'm sure he supported the war, but he's coordinating all this, and he actually has told the media that Norman Podhoretz does not speak for Rudy Giuliani on the issue of Iran, but no doubt Giuliani has assembled a lot of the neocon hawks, but also Fred Thompson. Don't forget Fred. He's very friendly with these folks. You know, he was one of the few prominent politicos who got behind the Scooter Libby's defense fund and held fundraisers for him, and you know, said a lot of things that were not true about the Scooter Libby case, trying to get a pardon for the guy. So a lot of neocons are also quite appreciative of that. So I would say those are the camps that are tugging at the heartstrings of neoconservatives out there. But as I said earlier, I believe the Iraq War will be a major factor in the coming election.
David from Stevens Point. David, where the heck are you? It's noisy. Hello.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, David.
I actually live in both Stevens Point and Iowa City, so I'm a.
Oh, you do.
I'm a caucus goer, and I'm on my commute. It's David Shore. Hi, David.
Hi, David. Who are you caucusing for?
I'm sorry, I can't hear very well. But my question is, it seems like in the Republican primary campaign, the Republicans are kind of getting a free ride on foreign policy. It seems like, you know, shouldn't we be having a lot tougher questions with, you know, the disaster that we've had, you know, kind of a real amateur hour, and, you know, betting everything on Musharraf and looking deeply into Putin's eyes, and, you know, with everything that's gone wrong, I've been wondering why we aren't seeing a much, you know, a much harsher or harder, more difficult debate on foreign policy issues on the Republican side?
Well, you know, there should be. But the, you know, the issue is that right now on the Republican side, the Republicans by and large agree amongst themselves on foreign policy. And, you know, you'd think the media would be pushing them a little bit harder, but campaigns tend to be shaped mostly by how each campaign sort of attacks the other. So on the Republican side, there have been lots of attacks recently on the issue of immigration with Giuliani and Thompson and Mitt Romney's campaign going after Mike Huckabee on immigration. So you'll be seeing a lot of that coverage in the media. When they all are essentially agreeing on what to do in Iraq, it doesn't generate a lot of headlines and a lot of coverage. I do believe, as I've repeated myself, that, you know, once it's a, you know, Democrat versus Republican and the foreign policy differences are very, very stark, that, you know, will become a dominant motif in the campaign and will take up a lot of space at the debates and will be the way that a lot of reporters frame the face-off.
Yeah, thanks, David, so much for your call. Keep in touch. Let us know where you're going when you go to caucus. An email, Michael from Krivitz: have any of the candidates, either Democratic or Republican, shown they understand the gravity of global climate change, shown the willingness to take risks to successfully meet that challenge, and shown the leadership ability to get a serious policy implemented?
Oh, boy, well, that's asking a lot. I mean, you know, they all, you know, on the Democratic side, they all speak to the seriousness of the problem. And they all, you know, and the need to take significant steps. You know, are they as significant as they ought to be or should be? I mean, there are some scientists who believe that if we don't take, you know, tremendously drastic draconian steps in the next 10 years, we may hit a tipping point and be gone. Outside of, you know, maybe Dennis Kucinich on the Democratic side, I'm not sure other Democrats are going to go that far. But they all seem to be, you know, serious-minded about it and cited as a priority for their possible presidency. On the Republican side, you know, John McCain, you know, has, you know, tried to, you know, pass global warming legislation with Joe Lieberman. You know, the environmentalists in town say it's not enough, but it's better than, you know, what else is out there. And certainly better than the, you know, than the Bush plan, which is, in essence, do nothing and hope for others to fix your problem for yourself. And then you got people like Fred Thompson, not like you have Fred Thompson, who last spring wrote a radio commentary mocking people concerned about global warming.
Oh, did he?
Yes, which I've blogged about more than once now because I still can't get over it. And there's nobody, obviously, on the, you know, other than John McCain on the Republican side who's really talking about this, you know, a great deal. So if you care about this issue, certainly, you know, you should be looking amongst the Democrats.
All right. Here's an email. Why does the right despise Hillary Clinton so much on a policy level? She seems less liberal than Obama and Edwards, yet the focus is always on her. I've heard some of the most vile comments about her. Is it because she's female and her image doesn't conform with what many people think women should be?
You know, I've been writing about that, you know, since 92. I keep saying to the right, why do you guys hate her or even Bill Clinton so much? Because, you know, they're a lot more, you know, a lot more liberal. I understand why you don't like Teddy Kennedy, mm-hmm. or why, you know, you didn't like Paul Wellstone. You know, there was something sociological about it. I don't think they just hated the Clintons. They thought, you know, she was a, you know, closet lesbian, you know, socialist who, you know, wanted to, you know, destroy America,
right?
And,
yeah,
and you know, and he was her boy toy, which she strings she, you know, she would pull, even though he was a, you know, you know, a moderate, you know, Democratic Leadership Council DLC Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And the best I can make of it is that they really see them as, you know, symbols of the '60s and their ascendancy marked, you know, a victory in the culture wars for the other side. Mm-hmm. You know, these were the libertine folks who actually enjoyed having sex when, you know, outside of marriage, and who, you know, did some form of drugs and had liberal attitudes towards abortion and drugs, whatever, you know, their policy positions were by the time they became grown ups, and they hung out with artists and homosexuals and intellectuals, and they were, you know, even though they seemed to be religious people in terms of church attendance, they were, you know, they were more, you know, allied with secularists. And it was kind of a symbolic thing. They were just the people that embodied all these values, not policies, but sort of values that the right, you know, thought had, you know, gone haywire in the 60s and 70s, and they were trying to push back. Hmm. And their reaction to Hillary and Clinton has always been an overreaction. And that actually has helped both Hillary and Bill Clinton politically over the years.
We got to say goodbye. David, thank you. It was fun.
Okay, let me remind people to go to the MotherJones.com site where I'm Washington editor, and to also look at DavidCorn.com.
Yeah, we'll do it. Thanks. David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones Magazine. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Peter Donalds for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production. We'll continue a political theme centering in on one of the Republican candidates the second hour of our program. So please, if you love politics, don't go away. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.